now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from Class of the Cults and the Cheese in Between. The movies are B, the entertainment is grade A. I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, joined by my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jason. Today, we have one of our semi-annual feedback episodes.
Yep, so let's get to that. We got two feedback here in the mailbag. Let's go. All right, the first one is from Luke, and it says, The Brood. Jay, just listened to your coverage of The Brood and was glad to hear a podcast about a film which rarely gets brought up outside of certain genre circles. David Cronenberg's longevity is a testament to his talent as a filmmaker, even if he is pretty solidly embedded in the genre cinema side of the house. I personally find that The Brood, like Scanners, Videodrome, and The Fly, is indicative of Cronenberg's devotion to striking and arresting visual images. Even when the story gets heady, quote-unquote out there, quote-unquote weird, or otherwise a little fuzzy around the edges, his strength is composing and executing shots which stick with the viewer, in which breeds, no pun intended, loyalty and affection among them. You talked about this with Scanners and the head exploding. That image has, for horror fans, entered the realm of iconic, even given the watered-down nature of what the word is in our language today. Often these images are of what I would dub human wreckage, quote-unquote, specifically unrealistic depictions of human anatomy in situations which cannot possibly exist. Excuse me for sounding like a film critic here, but when you combine this talent for creating memorable imagery of deformation and quote-unquote wrongness with a cinema verite mindset, the quote-unquote unblinking eye, the end result is exactly what Cronenberg typically achieves, images depicting humanity in a way which is so wrong and alien that they strike a visceral chord with us all, the viewers. Okay, so I was going to hang on. Like, there's more to go with this. So yeah, we talked about The Brood. And The Brood is a movie that for a long time was not available. You couldn't get it. And then the DVD came out when DVDs were kind of first getting introduced. There was a DVD that came out and it was the uncut version. And it was unheard of to see the uncut version, which only runs about, what, not even a minute longer. It's all that the scene of her licking the fetus and the thing like that. So the movie itself at its core is not super deep story-wise. I mean, the story is pretty straightforward and stuff like that, but a lot of Cronenberg movies are very straightforward by what's there story-wise, so it's not trying to hit you with a million twists and turns that you have to, like, kind of... It's not supposed to be a whodunit. You're trying to figure out what's happening. It puts in front of you. So, you say the same thing for Scanners, the same thing for Videodrome. I mean, Videodrome is probably the one that's probably got the most twists and turns because you're not 100% sure what's going on, because that whole movie is like a head trip, so, you know...
I mean, the thing, what I remember about The Brood was that it starts off real slow.
Yeah.
I mean,
it starts like a family drama
kind of thing. And so, we got to be invested. You know that Cronenberg's not going to leave you hanging at the end of the thing without at least explaining what the heck is going on. And, I mean, when you watch it, are you going to watch it again and again and again? Probably not. But the iconic scene that was again, like you said, it was just that first DVD that came out, and then it wasn't shown.
Yeah, no, it's never on TV. The movie's never on TV. It's like Videodrome is never on TV. Yeah. The Fly is. They'll show Cronenberg's The Fly because Cronenberg's The Fly was a major success.
Right, and it was millions of dollars.
Right, but I'm saying, but like Scanners is not on TV. Like, you're not going to see things. Like, you see these things, and maybe like they're on streaming services. You have to go search them out. They're never going to be somewhere it's going to be just shown on like HBO or Cinemax or Showtime. And yes, those things still exist for those of you who don't know that. You know, kind of thing. Like, though, they don't show Scanners. Unless they're doing a retrospective on Cronenberg, unless they're doing like a whatever. Like, they don't show that's not a movie in rotation. Which is funny because certain movies get in rotation on some of the Stars. It's like Screen Gems and whatever. It's a whole subset of on the cable things. They'll have certain horror movies they show in a rotation. Like, I literally, like The First Power was on like every other day one summer.
Yeah.
And that's a movie that's never on TV.
Yeah.
But the whole point is the Cronenberg stuff, unless they're doing a retrospective for him, they don't show them. And if they do, it's not The Brood. They'll show The Fly. They'll show Dead Ringers. They'll show... they might show Scanners because Scanners has got the most famous scene in that. It happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie. You're watching the first 5 minutes of the movie, the head explodes. But they don't show a lot of his stuff. They don't show Rabid, which is that's a great movie, but they don't show it, and they should. But there are special editions. I mean, again, people who want to see Rabid have seen it. People who want to own it, and those people who don't, it's kind of one of the things that's kind of gets. You know, it's on the fringes of what they may or may not know even exists.
Yeah, what's happening now with the even TCM is that they, when they start doing their retrospective, they will pick someone like Cronenberg, and it'll be at least maybe a half an hour expose of what he does, and then they'll show one or two of his movies behind the back. But again, that's you got to be a real fan of TCM and get their guide to know when these types of shows are on. Yeah. Because you turn on, at least for us, it's Channel 75, and you never know what show they're going to. And sometimes it's a great movie.
Yeah. Well, they'll do, what do you call it? They'll do like just giant bug movies one day.
Yeah.
And it's just out of nowhere. No rhyme or reason, not anything special. Like on Harryhausen's birthday, I get it. They should do a retrospective Ray Harryhausen. That's a very easy.
Yeah.
That's one of their better days for viewership because people just love popping on a Harryhausen movie. And they should. The thing with Harryhausen movies, they're so easy to put on because you don't have to cut anything out of the movie, and they're so beloved. Whether you're a Jason the Argonauts fan, some Roger Sinbad fan, whether you're or like First Man on the Moon or like all these different things, like it doesn't matter which of his movies they put on. There's nothing to cut. They bring back memories for people. They unlock memories for people who are older, who saw them when they first ran. It's movies you saw as a kid, depending on if you're in Gen X or even very, very early, you know, like a Xennial kind of thing, early millennial kind of thing. You might have seen those things because those movies were easy and safe to show kids. Before there was like horror that was PG, there was no PG horror. So you didn't show them horror. You showed them fantasy. You showed them, you know, dragons and skeletons and whatever, and it introduced you to the world of quote-unquote horror without being horrific. There's nothing horrific in those movies, you know? Like, I mean, when you're watching Jason and the Argonauts, and I mean, I had this discussion in school with one of my students. I was talking about, like, visual effects, and I said, well, you know, the master of visual effects was Ray Harryhausen. He had never heard the name before. I said, well, he did, like, Frying Blade. Like, what do you mean? And I showed him just the skeleton scene. I said, just watch when they rise out of the ground. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, that's done frame by frame. That's... It's every frame of that film had to be done. He's like, are you kidding? And I'm like, no, wait, now we're going to show them. I showed him the fight scene where there's literally three men acting with nothing in front of them, but guys with like poles. And then those poles are erased. And now there's seven skeletons. And they're like, he goes, holy cow. I said, wait, here's even the better part. He jumps over the body. He goes, okay. He goes, can a inanimate object jump? He goes, oh my God, how do you do that? How do you get it? I'm like, he did a flying brace and held them this way. He goes, and every time he had to go up and go over. I'm like, it'd be easy. Just walk around them or just don't show it.
Just don't show it.
You know? So, but they love showing like these sort of things, but that's Harryhausen kind of stuff. They'll even do, who was it? Obviously John Wayne and stuff like that, but I'm trying to remember the other, was it George Powell? They were doing something. I'm trying to remember one of the things. So I showed War of the Worlds. I showed something about, I think it might've been George Powell.
Yeah.
And they were like, but then they don't show like a whole day. They just show a couple movies. right? And when they do the giant bug movies, guarantee you, you're getting them, mm-hmm. which is in primetime. That's their best. That they put them on to everyone. Well, I mean, people love them.
That's one of the 10 best movies.
I think. What I'm saying is, but they put that on in the primetime slot. Yeah. You get Tarantula. You get, you know, depending on the day, you might get The Day the World Ended. You might get like Beginning of the mm-hmm. End. You might get like, it's all like things like that about like the fallout kind of thing. But it then, and it'll tie into something, even though we may not know what they're doing. So, but if they were to show Cronenberg, the chances that you're going to see The Brood, I mean, it could happen.
Again, that's one of the, I'm not saying it's one of his lesser movies, but if they were going to show just one movie.
Well, they're going to show, The Fly.
The Fly.
Right? And then they're probably Scanners.
Yeah.
I mean, because Dead Ringers is good. Because the problem with Dead Ringers is Cronenberg, but it's like, I feel like it's not Cronenberg. And it sounds weird, but it's his. But like, when you watch that, you're like, this is so commercial. This is so not him. His movies are better. I mean, The Fly being because he just pushed the body horror so far. His movies are better when you're adjacent to Hollywood. You don't want to be in Hollywood and be adjacent. Right. Like, Videodrome was not made as a big budget release. You can't make Videodrome that way. You just can't. The movie's about like, it's about fetishes and sex things, and it's such crazy stuff. I mean, he reaches into his chest. I mean, at the end of the movie, spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie, makes a cancer gun in his hand. He shoots the guy, and he doesn't shoot him. The guy's got cancers coming out of his body. It's like, what?
That's not one of the ones that
no, because you can't, because that thing is as close to being unrated as you can be and be rated. But it's like talk about like, it's like trying to show, back in the day, trying to show Reanimator. You couldn't show Reanimator on TV. Now Reanimator is pretty tame. Just there's some nudity. But like the killing and stuff is nothing we haven't seen on the level of just Game of Thrones, you know, kind of thing. But anyway, we're getting a little far afield there. But so let's just finish up Luke's email. Luke, real quick at the end, put, as an aside, it's great to hear that Criterion version of The Brood is on Cinemax, which is the uncut version. Unsurprisingly, I heartily approve of more genre films getting the Criterion treatment, given that the genre films are often overlooked, and putting them on a streaming service is nice, if only to raise the number of potential eyeballs which can see the film. And that in and of itself is something of a Cronenberg concept, isn't it? Dial up the depravity of choice on demand on your screen, which is exactly Videodrome. Looking forward to what comes down the pipe in 2024. So that was the first email from Luke. Again, you know, making a good point, obviously. With streaming services, which are now getting out of hand, with ads and pricing and stuff like that, it's so funny how we always talk about, people talk about like they always quote The Simpsons as being able to predict the future because they've hit so many things over the years that have actually come true, which is crazy. But like, when you look at film that was cutting edge at the time in the late 70s and early 80s. And they talked about, well, this is happening. But like, that'll never happen. Directors like Cronenberg and John Carpenter and Romero and whatever. How many of those things are happening now? How many of those things, even doing things Stephen King wrote about in the 70s and early 80s, how many of them have come true? And you're like, how is this possible? How are we in a world where this is possible to happen? Yeah. But because in 1980, we didn't think about it.
Right. With the possible exception of real zombies, the horror that happens almost on a daily basis was foretold back in those 70s and 80s movies.
Yeah, well, right. But I'm saying is, but even the the idea that you can live in a world where like let's go back even further than that. You go back to Ray Bradbury in Fahrenheit 451. Literally, the entire thing is let's burn books, right? Which happens now. And everyone has a seashell in their ear, quote unquote. Like an iPod in your ear. And they're always listening to something. Literally, this entire generation never takes their eye. They won't take them out of their ears. They can't make eye contact. Like, why is a book from 70 years ago, right? Is that all? I mean, Fahrenheit 451's got to be at least 70 years old, right?
Even though,
what I'm saying is at least 70 years old, if not more, right? So how come a book from 70 years ago knew, again, what was going to happen? Because that's where we're headed. We have a generation now, a generation now that when they are going for job interviews, they can't look their employer in the eye. They can't answer questions. They use vulgarity in situations that are inappropriate. They don't know how to dress properly. I mean, we just saw it at school. And like the fifth thing on the list was brought their parents to the interview, like not got a ride, brought their parents into the interview. Like that, where is this going? Like, I understand that that's not every single kid in the world, but it's the vast majority, and it's getting worse, and we're seeing it get worse and worse and worse to the point where it's like, you know, I understand everyone's got to be a winner. No one can, you know, no one can feel like they're not hurt or all that stuff, but I think, but at some point we got to like hold things accountable. But why were they knowing? How did they know that? How did that stuff come to? And I'm not talking Nostradamus, like the prophecies of Nostradamus, right, kind of thing, like whatever, like where he kind of gets things semi right, you know, kind of thing. Like there'll be a war. Ooh, like spooky, you know, kind of thing. Like literally, we have an entire generation that walks around and they never want to interact with it. They don't want to look at each other. That sounds exactly like when you're reading about what's his name? Montauk, right? Is that's the main antagonist in, or not antagonist, he's the one who's getting chased down, right? But that's Fahrenheit 451. And I read that when I was in like sixth grade. And I'm like, oh, they'll never be like, and people were like, well, you know, you guys wear headphones when you listen to your Walkman. And it's like, yeah, but we don't have them on all the time. Now they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you carry a computer in your hand. I mean, I have a cell phone in my hand I'm reading off of. Like, this is more powerful than putting men on the moon kind of, you know, technology from whatever. But that's another podcast for another day. Follow for the Dystopian podcast coming soon. Or as Luke would say, the sweater podcast will be. All right. Second one says Mighty Joe Young. We could not be any more different than the brood, I think, than Mighty Joe Young. Jay, just finished listening to you and Dad coverage of Mighty Joe Young. My word, do I need to rewatch this film? During the episode, you referred to this movie as having a broader audience than a film like King Kong. I would expand on this by saying classifying Mighty Joe Young as a family adventure film, an exciting, fantasyful film with a sense of wonder suitable for viewers of all ages. This is the same sort of subgenre in which I would count films as Wizard of Oz, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the Disney version, which, let's be honest, he looks at which Disney made in 54 and spent decades chasing after, which is true. They've never 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, when you watch it, you cannot believe it's 1954.
That's right.
It's amazing for 54. Yeah. But they never got that high again. Not one of their family adventure movies, none of their live action, I'm not talking their animated stuff, their animated stuff's their anime. Not one of their live action movies ever got back to that level. That's hard. When you make this one, you're like, wow. We keep making these, but you keep falling short of it. And I don't mean that the movies weren't good.
No.
But the Black Hole fell way short of like Star Wars. But if there's no Star Wars, if it doesn't exist, the Black Hole might be considered to be, you know, higher than it is. And I know some people, including Luke, like the Black Hole. But like I'm just saying is that's a movie that is not Star Wars.
Right.
And it always is compared to Star Wars.
Yeah.
And, you know.
But I mean, a movie that was closer to would have been Swiss Family Robinson, which is a really good family adventure.
But the problem is, it's not the level
because
you don't have the submarine, you don't have the squid fight. You know, right. I mean, there's so much in that movie that you're like, wow.
And
it explodes in color on your screen. It's not like it's black and white. Right. It's in color.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You know, and if you have the Blu-ray version of that and you on the special effects, what it took to make that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, the commitment on the part of Disney at that point in time. I mean, they were not, they didn't have the theme parks. They didn't have.
Yeah, they weren't the mogul, worldwide leader
and
whatever.
If that had flopped.
Oh, yeah, it would have killed them.
I mean, Disney might not be around today.
Yeah. So Luke continues here. So movies like Back to the Future, Labyrinth, or even National Treasure. Like that's but more as a family adventure. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in them, you know, that would be totally objectionable. I mean, although I got to admit, Back to the Future, it's so funny. So Back to the Future is made in the 80s. He goes back to the 50s, right?
Right.
So you want to make that movie now? When are you going to go back to? 1994? Right. The amazing year of 94. Right. Like, it is scary when you're like, oh, we're going back in time. We're going back 30 years. Go back 30 years. We're the 90s.
Yes.
Where we're going to have grunge and MTV and Beavis and Butthead. That's the going back thing. It doesn't seem like that's possible because... Why? Because the world, 1950 to 1980, that 30 years right there, the world changed drastically. How everything, just the way the world worked, because so much occurred.
Yeah.
1980 to 2010, yes, the world changed, but not in as drastic a way as from 50 to 80.
Well, but the more drastic thing was the innovations, the discoveries of the cell phone and things like that, because You know, when I talk about back in the day, I'm not talking about 1990.
No, no, but right. Well,
neither am I.
Yeah.
Like when I say to people, I say, well, you don't understand. It's like, you know, it wasn't that long ago that, and then I spit out something that happened in like 1987. And I go, that was 30 plus years ago. You're like, how can that be over 30 years ago? How can it be 40 years ago? And I'm like, oh yeah, because like in a couple of years, I'm going to be 50. And I'm like, oh my God, 50 years ago would be 1978. In a few years, would be 1978. Yeah. How 1978 is like modern times.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not like, I'm not talking about the 40s, but that's the crazy part is you think like, well, you know, because we used to, in the 80s, like, well, they look back at like things that happened in the 40s, things that happened, like we're talking about end of World War II, the Korean War, things like that. Like, we're at a point now where, you know, when we were talking about those things, Vietnam is that far away from now than we were talking about in like, you know, World War II was or whatever was, right? Kind of thing. Like, so like, because like MASH was the Korean War. Right. Yes. It wasn't like MASH wasn't made like 60 years after the Korean War. It's looking back on things that people were still alive who fought in the Korean War.
Yeah.
And now we're getting to a point where a lot of people, I mean, again, there's still people who are alive who, you know, who were in World War II or whatever kind of thing. It were most of the time, but they weren't, you know, a lot of soldiers from that time aren't alive anymore because World War II was almost 100 years ago.
Well, they just had the remembrance of D-Day on June 6th. And the what they're saying is that there's only two surviving participants, let's say, or soldiers or whatever, from that time.
Yeah.
They're still alive.
Well, yeah, but and that's what I'm saying. But now we're working up to the point where we're getting to the point where people who fought in Vietnam now are kind of more dying off. And you're like, how is that possible? Because Vietnam, that's like Rambo. Like, that's like Rambo, which is flashing back to Vietnam, which at that point was 20 years. Rambo's what, 85, 86. Yep. So we're talking almost, you know, 20 years, right? So, but that's 20 years in 80. So now it's getting to be 40 plus years.
Yeah.
You can't put 40 years on. So somebody who went off to war at 18,
think about it.
No, but at 18, 40, now they're almost 60.
Well, think about it. Stallone is 75.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
He's the same age as me.
Yeah. So I'm saying, but that's what I'm saying is but you don't think about those things because if you, this generation doesn't think about any of that stuff, but like the generation, the Gen X and whatever kind of thing, we start thinking about things like we remember all that because we remember a time when the phone was attached to the wall with a cord and you had it was rotary and whatever. But then we remember the time when like, oh my God, there's a computer in my classroom. I mean, it played Oregon Trail, but that's what you did. But like we were there for all of it. So we don't think of it as being two separate entities. They are one entity because we crossed that bridge. But everyone who came before, the generation before, that stuff was at the, you know, later, you're already an adult, right? When you're a kid growing up into that, it becomes just part of your childhood. It's part of your experience. You don't know that this is, but if you were 30 already and had never, you know, like, I mean, not never seen a computer, but never did any of the stuff like we can do now, or you were born in a time when every single person has a cell phone or whatever, like you never knew a time when there wasn't this. But if you're old enough, you remember growing up without that. Right. You grew up at a time when you could walk to the movie theater and not worry about like every single thing possibly could happen going wrong. And you knew when the average American, you know, salary was $3,000, but a house only cost $5,000. So it was not impossible to buy a house. But now you're talking about just like literally a middle class that is, especially where we live, if you don't make over 170 grand, you're not even in the lowest end of the middle class.
Right.
How can that possibly be? Middle class was $3,000 as your average income for the year, $5,000 to buy a house. If you figure that's supposed to be 1.5 times to buy your house, if you're making $175,000, you need 1.5. You're buying a shanty for that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying is, so the worlds we live in have changed so drastically, but the difference was that from 50s to 80s, I mean, you had first man on the moon, things like that, like all those major things happened. Like, but the world that grew, the innovations were, I don't want to say bigger, but they were like they seemed to be bigger because it was like, holy cow, wow, we can do this. How we can have this, right? And I think like now the innovations that are happening don't necessarily seem as world changing because the world is not so big anymore. Right.
I mean, what I can see, and I'll give you an example on Jeopardy. We watch Jeopardy all the time.
Yeah.
The antiquity type questions, the ones that go back, let's say, to the Roman era, those all the contestants can answer. When they get to the, and I don't want to say the 40s or the 50s with the questions, but when you get to any of the time frame before 1980 and let's say after 1940 and before 1980, the only people who can answer those questions are either the really well-educated ones or the ones who remember that era.
Yeah.
But none of the ones of even the 40-year-olds of today, they have no clue. And when the question is answered, nobody rings in because they don't know. And yet when you hear the answer, for someone like me, if I hadn't gotten it, I said, yeah, I remember that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's really the difference. I mean, it hits you in the face every day.
So I'm saying the world itself, while still, you know, and we have more people now than we had, you know, 60, 80 years ago kind of thing, just the population explosion kind of thing, right? The other problem is that the world is not as big anymore. Like, I wish I was kidding, but like the idea of in 1950 getting on a plane and flying to Japan was not something you just did. No, can I get a flight? I can go right now and get a flight to Japan as long as I have a passport. Yeah. Direct. Yeah. Just go. Right. That's how crazy is that? Like the world has changed. Like transportation has changed. Everything has changed. And I get that. But it's just when we see it, we watch old movies, right? We see it all the time. The way forget the way everyone's dressed because people are actually dressed appropriately.
Right.
Right. You know, kind of
the vernacular.
Well, yes. But I'm saying, but like when we watch like even just movies that are supposed to be like timeless, right?
Yeah.
You know, unless you're making a period piece, unless you're making the Cleopatras or whatever that take place in a certain time that no one alive lived in, that anything that's taking place in quote unquote modern times, watch the movies from the 40s and 50s and the 60s take place in the current times. Now they're like, oh, those are like old. It's like, but that was current then.
Right.
I watch a movie that's current now, but I can watch a movie that's current right now from 2023, 24, or watch a movie from 2020. There ain't no difference. Like things are kind of the same. Right. But if I watch something from the 1950s to even if you were watching in the late 60s, like, oh man, look how old and stuffy they look because not everyone's wearing a shirt and tie, not whatever. Right. Like the changes that happened were big changes.
Yeah.
Now the changes are smaller. They just impact more people because there's more people to impact.
Yeah. I mean, take a movie like Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
That is considered one of the top, I think, top 10 movies of all time.
Yep.
When you watch it, it brings you back. Again, if you don't remember.
Now it's a period piece.
It's a period piece, but it brings you back to the 1940. Right before the war begins, and all of the symbolism that's in that movie, it portends what's going to happen. And that's why it's a classic, because it's one of the most movies you can watch over and over and over again. There are some movies that are considered classics, but how many times can you watch it? I mean, we can watch, like when Ben-Hur is on, it's a four-hour movie. Love that movie. Mom and I always say, how many hours are we into this already? Wait, have we seen the chariot scene? No. Okay, let's wait for the chariot scene.
Well, but like what do you call it? Like Citizen Kane is considered to be an all-time classic movie. I've watched it once. I will never watch that movie again because it's boring.
It's boring
as heck. And I get the whole idea that it underlies this and it portrays that. Awesome. You can give me all the film school stuff you want. I find that movie insanely boring. Now, on the flip side of it, right? I mean, forget King Kong because I've seen King Kong and forever many times, but like and Godzilla and like we talk about even them, right? And those movies I love. Like I could literally watch it. It Terror for Beyond Space. I loved it. I mean, it's only 6 or 7 minutes, so it's not a big investment of time, right? But I love that movie. I know everything's going to happen in that movie. I know literally it's going to happen. But that movie is got a core memory it unlocks for me. Is it one of the greatest movies ever made? No, currently not. I mean, if you look at the budget alone, just look at his chin sticking out as his tongue. You know, his chin, the mask didn't fit. Like, it's not a great movie that way. But when you start thinking about that, but that takes place in a time before we had gone to the moon. So they're like, this is what rockets look like. And you're like, oh, this is quaint. So, but when you start looking at when technology advances and then movies advance to keep up with that, like, you know, a movie like Star Wars which was so fantastical in 1976, kind of thing, like, oh my God, this will never happen. Like, now we have, you know, space stations and stuff. Mm. And that's not, I'm not saying we have lightsabers and, you know, dogfights and things, because let's face it, what is Star Wars really and all that whole series? Yeah. It's literally the old war movies, right, from the 30s and 40s. All those dogfights, now we just do them with lasers and shiny objects instead of, like, you know, biplanes and whatever, you know. Yeah. You know. So anyway, let's get back to Major Young. So the infection of Major Young are fantastic from top to bottom. The sandwich method, later called Dynamation or Dynorama, of combining live-action background, a foreground plate, around the animation plate is well executed here. Dad noted that scenes of the horses riding in front and behind of Joe is a great example, which is true, because you wouldn't be able, because before that, you didn't have that. I mean, until, because let's be honest, Willis O'Brien used rear projection. I mean, it did it well, because you can see it in Kong. Like, he has, like, the actors in front and reprojection. But, like, you know, Harryhausen took the idea of plates and stuff like that, like, next level. He just kind of, you know, and he just got better and better at it. And color was going to be his enemy every time, but he got it so good you couldn't tell. Because black and white, you can kind of hide stuff. For me, though, the standout scenes are Joe in the cage, where his personality and character shine through. Harryhausen's ability to imbue his characters with life and vitality combined with the narrative to produce a moody and haunting effect as our hero suffers the indignations of his captivity. Additionally, the female with the burning, Additionally, the finale with the burning orphanage is a tremendously exciting and predicts the use of, braziers to light the den of Medusa's some 3 decades later in Clash of the Titans. He's right. Yeah. The way that it's lit in Clash of the Titans is lit the same way that scene is lit. Because remember, that's the only scene that's not black and white.
That's right.
It's sepia, because it has to, but it's lit with, and it's lit differently. And they had to get the idea of the fire. Requisite joke, Jay, you said, if you didn't stop for the orphanage fire, it'd become the bad guy. Which, to paraphrase Monty Burns, this is a Simpson reference, who are the orphans going to complain to? Their parents? Which is a Simpsons reference for those who get it. But it's true, though. Like, if they don't stop for the orchard, like, well, we got to get out of here. We're going to get killed. Like, they're going to kill him. Well, we got to stop for the orchard, because you got to be, because it's, yeah, you're not going to be the heel.
The little girl just died.
Right. Well, that's the whole point, because, yeah. But you know, Dad, like, as it seems like a no-brainer to us, but I'm going to guarantee, we just were talking about, there's a whole bunch of people who, like, who cares about those kids? Who's, leave them. I only care about me. Me is the important.
Well, you know, that, I'm sure that the movie was written that way, but when you watch the movie and he escapes in the van,
yeah,
you don't expect that they're going to have a climactic ending.
Like, really, like something like that's even bigger than they already had.
It almost dwarfs what happened way before.
But you know what, though? But it's completely on character and on point.
Yes.
And that's the key. It's not something that's completely out of character. If you're watching a movie and this person has acted this way the whole time and all of a sudden turns a 180, you're like, what the heck? Like, why would you do that?
Well, but you see, even in the van, and, well, when they go from the van to the truck.
Yeah.
And the guy says, so my truck.
Yeah.
Mighty Joe Young is sitting at the end of the truck, and when he spits at the at the police car.
That's that's the thing is, though. Like,
right, so but it's still humor.
Yeah, but it stays on character. And the idea that, like, that shows that what his act is so selfless there, because she says, go get him. Okay. He's going back up. And you don't know that he does it. I mean, obviously they fall to the ground and you think, oh, he could have died. Okay. But, like, that's the selfless act there. There is nothing, unlike King Kong, where he literally didn't ask to be taken from his island. He didn't ask for any of this stuff. Look, I didn't ask for this. You guys started this. And that's the old F around and find out kind of thing. And that's what it was, right? Kong is killed at the end. Spoiler alert for a 90-year-old movie. Right, is killed at the end, you know, kind of thing, because they don't know what else to do. They created the problem. They let him escape, and now we have to kill him because you are the problem. The bad guys in King Kong are the humans, and people don't want to hear that, but it's true. King Kong, him is representative of whatever else he might be representative of. He's not the problem. He's just, you know, you let an animal loose, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And he didn't want to be. He wanted to stay on the island. He was happy to keep getting the native girls with the fake hair. Well, I got a real blonde now. Like, he was super happy with that. Here he is killing off things, fighting things. It's very different than the Kong we have now, which is written, again, he's still sympathetic. He's still whatever, right? But, like, the whole point is, when you watch, like, Kong Skull Island, right? He didn't ask you to come to his island. He didn't ask you to drop. They literally say it. They have to signpost it for people who are too stupid to get that stuff. They'll tell you, you're dropping bombs on his island. You're not invited here. No one told you to come here. But if you think about it, the 1977 version of Khan speaks more to that. Why are they going to the island? Yes. Not for a monkey.
No, for the oil.
For the oil, because they're greedy. And what happens? It comes back to bite him in the ass. And that's exactly what should happen to him. And no one, no, and whether you like the 77 version or not, no one feels bad for any human who gets killed in that movie. Not one. Because none of them are there for good reasons. Now, I mean, Denham is trying to escape getting, you know, sued and go to jail or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, chicanery going on there, right? Kind of thing. But they're sailing off to this island. He wasn't going there to, like, you know, he makes movies. He does whatever. Like, okay. And you might think, like, well, movie maker, like, right. But there's nothing, like, devious. There's nothing greedy about it. I mean, he's trying to escape being prosecuted and go to jail, right? But that's the whole thing. Like, the 77 Kong, which is a product of its time, I get that. And that's very much the world that's different from 33 to 77, right? Or 76, whatever year it is, 76. The whole idea, though, is you don't feel bad for any of them. They die, great. Kong gets killed, no one's happy about that because Kong did nothing wrong, right? And whether you like, you know, Jeff Bridges in that movie or not, or whether you like, you know, whatever or not, like whether you agree with their motives or whatever, like, that's fine. But the oil company, literally, like when Charles Rogan gets killed, you're like, yep, no one feels bad. And that was his whole thing. He didn't want to take that role. He's like, well, I'm going to be responsible for all this. Like, I was just, whatever movie he made before, he was like, kind of being the bad guy. He's like, wait. They go, no, it's a good role. It's a good role. It's a good role. And he was kind of sold on the idea that he was going to be Carl Denham, except that he's not. Yeah, he's not. So,
well, you know, you and I have talked about this, and Luke and I had a long discussion. My take on the the Marvel or the
MonsterVerse.
MonsterVerse. The attitudes now towards the monsters is one of endearment. I mean,
because they're the stars in the movie, Dad.
Yeah, I know. But again, they're the destruction that happens in the, let's say, the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, where he crushes the building. It's almost expected because he was a product of the A-bomb, and he comes out of the war. Same with Godzilla in 1954. But here, they're Godzilla going to sleep in the Coliseum, in the Coliseum, the end of the movie, everybody is happy that he's there, but the destruction that he has caused, and again, that's part of the MonsterVerse universe, and Luke and I, the discussion we've had, you can appreciate it as a movie, but again, and my take is, I'm looking at it as, I just have a different bent on it, and
well, they're also not making those are, and I said this to you. They're action movies.
Yes.
They're action, family, not necessarily family, whatever, but it can be family, but those are popcorn, go to the theater, they're putting them out there.
Right.
They're just like Fast and Furious, or just like any of the other ones you make, there's like all the Marvel movies. The idea is they want to get butts in seats, right? They aren't making the movie that is more realistic. They're not making the movie that is more grounded in like the human story and stuff like that. And because people complain constantly, I don't want humans in my big monster movie. Like, but what happens is, like, you need the humans to carry the story through.
But the humans that you don't see,
but they don't. Okay, but no one cares about them. That's the whole point. That is. But
no, that's exactly.
But that's not Godzilla doing that. You can thank Marvel. Marvel, they kill thousands of people per movie. No one cares.
No one cares. That's exactly what I'm saying.
But then there's a difference, though.
They're not part of the story.
Right. I understand that. So they've been killing people off for years. And those are family-friendly. Everyone's got to go see those movies. They've been doing it for years. It wasn't until DC, when they had after what's the Superman movie?
Man of Steel.
Where they talked about, like, the destruction he caused. And this is what you call, like, they finally went. And what happened? People lashed out against that. I don't want to hear about that. I don't care. That's because you're in the wrong generation, Dad. You're looking at it the wrong way. This generation does not care about that stuff. Because they just want their movie. Yeah,
that's what
do you call? What number? 7, 8? Whatever one where they have the helicopters and they're shooting rockets at the cars and Fast and Furious. And they're changing. Like, you're in L.A. If you shot a rocket into the streets of L.A., you kill hundreds and hundreds of people. No one cares.
No one cares. No, but The Rock's got to smash the cast off his arm so he can jump out a freaking window, get in his Humvee or whatever he's driving, right? But that's all you people care about. I just want to see this happen. I want to see Vin Diesel do this, or no one wants to see Vin Diesel at all. Whatever your mindset might be. You've got heat-seeking missiles being shot into the city of Los Angeles. No. No, that doesn't happen.
Right.
And I understand that we are now 20 plus years away from the real horror that occurred in New York City, that people, and I hate to say this because some of us don't forget it, but a lot of people don't even know. Okay. When we remember on September 11th, not to get too deep here, when we have our moments of silence and we remember these things, my kids in school don't care unless their parents were somehow affected and they've now passed it on. But I work with people. Literally, one of my best friends, his dad died in 9/11 because he was in the tower, right? And that's something that weighs on him every day. But you know what? Even though, thank God, I didn't have anybody I knew in there, and I could have, right? It still weighs on you. You don't realize it weighs on you until that date gets closer and it starts weighing again. And I understand maybe it's different because we live where we live and stuff like that, but it should still weigh on you. It should still be something there. But if you were born in 2010 and you're now 14 years old, well, that was like 10 years ago before I was born. That has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. And it's not even in any books that you're going to read.
It is. No, now, well, they don't have books anymore, Dad. We don't have books. We use all online. Use the computer. They cover up through. They got to cover up through. I was speaking with one of the socialist teachers. History teachers. We don't call them social studies anymore because that's, degrading somehow. Yeah. The same way calling someone a janitor is degrading, but custodial staff is not. I don't know. Either way, the custodial staff works their asses off. But the whole idea is that they now have to teach up to now. They have to get through now. They go, but we can't leave out anything before. So whereas I had to end in 1990, right? I had to get through Reagan and then beginning of Bush. Right. Okay. Now they got to cover the 90s, the early 2000s. They got to cover all that. Like they got to cover all that in the same amount of time that my teachers had to cover from whatever to there. But now tack on another 30 years they got to cover. They go, how in depth can we get? How can we get into any of these things? I mean, we used to spend a lot of time talking about World War II. I mean, Haley, literally this year, they talked about World War II in social studies. Like that was like most of her year. I mean, she's in eighth grade, but it's like when they get to high school, they don't talk about it anymore. Well, that's why things are forgotten. If you don't talk about something and you have no interest in looking back because you don't care what happened before me is the important when you're taking 7,000 selfies in a year and you're only worried about yourself and your TikTok and your followers and everything else, that's all you worry about in life, Dad, why would you care of someone who died 50, 30, 20, even 10 years ago, right? Unless it's your brother, your uncle, your dad, your whatever, someone who's related to you directly, they don't care. Yeah. And that's part of the problem. And that's what you get in these movies. You have a generation who doesn't care. They just want to see what they want to see.
You know, there's an old axiom that I remember from a kid. And it went like this. It said, the more things change, the more they stay the same. That is not the case.
Well, things are changing more. But the problem is what we're getting, the changes are kind of, there are still things that still should be the same. That are being pushed aside because society says they're not what needs to be there. But there's going to be a tipping point when it's either going to have to come back or we've already seen that movie. I've seen Planet of the Apes. I know what's freaking coming because that's where we're at. We were talking about movies predicting the future, but it's going to be a shame when I literally know where it's going because if we're not tipping it back the other way. Sorry, this is a very heady podcast for Bots, Bugs, and Babes, right? If we're not tipping it back the other way, and start getting back to those things that made people civilized to each other and whatever, we're going to keep going. And I've already seen that. And I don't need, five astronauts to get on a spaceship and go to the back to Earth to return there to find the Statue of Liberty in ruins on the street. Like, that's where we're going. There are too many things that show you what's happening.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but that is ultimately where we're going if we keep pushing that envelope. And you cannot agree, that's totally fine, because most people listening to this podcast are old enough to understand that probably right here. We don't get a whole lot of young listeners, right?
Yeah.
Unless they're like, sons and daughters of people, whatever. But I'm saying, I'm saying like Haley might listen or my nieces and nephews or even somebody who's driving the car because there's no swearing on here. But like the tipping point is coming. And I'm not saying it's happening in, you know, later this year, but it could be in 5 years, it could be in 10 years, it could be whatever. But at some point, things have to go back the other way. Because if it doesn't go back the other way, we're going to keep, it's going to just topple. And that's the end of it. And again, I've already seen that movie. I've already read that book. I know how it turns out. And I'm really not looking forward to that. Because I'm too old to be running around like I am, like in like Walking Dead. I ain't got time for that stuff. I got way too much things to do. And, you know, I'd actually like to get a good night's sleep. Anyway, as an aside, let's get back to that. WOR Channel 9, now WWOR, is licensed to Secaucus, New Jersey, and serves the New York metro area. So for those of you not from the New York metro area, you may have no idea what we're talking about. But wait, we'll tie it in. The connection to King Kong, Son of Kong, and Mighty Joe Young came about 1955 when the station's owner group, General Tire, purchased RKO Radio Pictures. The acquisition gives WOR access to to RKO's movie library as a catalog fodder for broadcast, crucial to for any independent station. That is how we got King Kong, Mighty Joe Young, and Son of Kong on WOR every single Thanksgiving for as long as, and I wish they still showed it. They don't. But you see, the thing is, like TCM could do that, but they'd have to license those to show them.
Well, TCM has shown that they'll show Kong and Son of Kong back to back without breaking, because the
no, last, I understand. The you can kind of go into it, yeah. What I'm saying is, but they should show on Thanksgiving. They don't. They show some like I don't know, what's that one called? They're like romantic movies they have on, right? Yeah. Which is not what you need on Thanksgiving, because they're not a whole lot of Thanksgiving movies, right? You know, not any that you want to show on Thanksgiving. They'd usually be a little more downtrodden, like Last of the Mohicans, kind of downtrodden. You don't want to show that. But I'm saying is, but they should show King Kong, Son of Kong, Mighty Joe Young. Because if you showed them in the morning, just show them in the morning, there's enough people who have that core memory, who lived in the right part of the country, who remember the ads with King Kong, this Thanksgiving, you have one extra guest for dinner. And that's what the ad said. And it's right. King Kong. And you're like, yeah. And it started, and they ran all day.
Yeah.
And then you ran all day. So you watched the parade in the morning, then you watch King Kong or whatever, and then you put the football game on the afternoon. You're viewing. You only had to go between three channels because you only had five.
Now you got 1,000
channels, and they're still ain't anything on. Anyway, so as Luke says, we're wrapping up. Thanks for the episode. Looking forward to the Terminator, which we covered earlier this year. Yeah. So, folks, like I said, much more heady episode than we normally have here. Sorry about that. It also ran a little longer than normal too, which is fine. You know, we appreciate the feedback, and I love that Luke sends feedback. I try to send feedback for his show, too. It's hard sometimes because I don't read all those comics or watch all those episodes of Ultraman, but in this movie or something like that, I can definitely talk about that. Just want to mention, and now that we're, you know, by the time you guys are hearing this, it's kind of old news. But on Netflix and on Prime and all that stuff, you now can see Godzilla Minus One. Dad and I talked about Godzilla Minus One earlier this year as being one of the best movies we saw at the tail end of 2023. If you haven't seen it, it is outstanding. There is an American dub that's available. And according to sources, it is one of the best dubs ever on an international movie. But it doesn't, I mean, still, it's you're still watching mouth moves and whatever. It's still like that. If you can, because again, I understand some people can't. It's hard for your eyes, whatever. If you can watch the movie in Japanese and read the subtitles, do it. I mean, you're not missing things. Like, the movie is so intense at times, but it's the emotions there. And they said they did a really good job of capturing the emotion. Because that's the problem is, some people, like, they're saying lines just to say lines. But they really did a good job of getting actors and different actors to do the parts. But if you haven't seen Godzilla Minus One, please go check it out. Well worth your time. I have not watched the black and white version. You watched the black and white version. And you saw the color version, obviously, in the theater.
Yeah. The black and white version brings you back to 1954.
That's what they were hoping for.
There were so many references, visual references to 54's movie, that even in black and white, I tell you, you just riveted to the screen. Now we saw it. We saw it in color.
Yeah.
And I mean, in color, it's
spectacular.
But it the color, whether it's color or black and white, does not add or subtract from the emotions that you actually go through, because that's the movie. It is not a Godzilla movie. He's just the protagonist in there. Yeah. And that's all. That's really what it is.
He's not the protagonist. He's the antagonist.
We're
not doing things to him. He's doing the stuff to us. Right. I mean, the movie is all about redemption. That's what the whole movie is about. The entire movie is about redemption. If you haven't seen it, you'll understand. But like at the point where, everyone's seen what Godzilla looks like in the movie. Like the design is totally different than it doesn't look anything like what we get now in the MonsterVerse Godzilla. Mm-hmm. It pays homage to other Godzillas, but his size, his mass, like what he is, right? And to be honest, the first 10 minutes of that movie has one of the most intense fight scenes filmed when they attack Udo Island, right? And I'm not giving anything away. Literally, the movie opens with Udo Island. They're landing a plane, right? That scene there in the beginning is so intense and packs so much impact, but there's so much going on. The second viewing, you get, not that I didn't get the text with the happening, but there's so much going on that you have to understand Japanese culture a little more deeply than just like they live on an island somewhere across the world, right? Like the idea of honor, the idea of like, you know, redemption, the idea of respect, the idea of like, you know, all those things and their roles in society. It's so much deeper than just, you know, here's a monster movie, right? So if you haven't seen it, well worth it. It is different in the idea that, and I can say this because I tell people the whole time. If you never saw Fury Road, see Fury Road in color. You got to see it in color. You got to understand the vastness of the desert. Once you've seen Fury Road, watch the black and chrome, because the black and chrome makes everything that was vast bleak. You just are like, wow, there's nothing.
Right.
And that feeling of nothing hits harder in Fury Road because it's a desert and stuff like that, right? In this one, in Godzilla Minus One, it takes you from, okay, we're watching this period piece. This is a period piece. And it brings you back to the 1950 feel of like, oh, now it's like when we saw the first. It's just giving you more of a different nostalgic feel with something that's there. The other one would be when Logan, but the black and white version of Logan. That gives you a different feel, even different than Fury Road, in that you're watching, that looks like an old, when you're watching it, because you're watching him, you know, and there's lots of blood and stuff in that movie. When you watch that in black and white, it just gives you a different feel for the characters. It kind of takes away anything that might be, it kind of makes you watch it in a different lens. But they all hit differently. They're all black and white, and they all hit differently for different reasons because of the kind of movie you're watching. Anyway. All right, folks. So we will have, obviously, coming up, we have Friday the 13th, Part 5, you know, our Jasonless Jason movie. And then later on this summer, we have other things coming down the pipe. So Dad and I will be back in August with Friday the 13th, Part 5. For those of you who have not seen it, catch up, because you need to watch it, because we're going to ruin that movie for you. Otherwise, we're not going to tell you everything. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it, because you need to see it. And then we'll tell you what's coming up. All right. I think we're good, Dad, right?
Yeah.
All right. So like we say here, folks, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which up until a few days ago was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?